Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to XYZ, the podcast about CNC, automation, robotics, business, and more. My name is Nick Frank, one of the owners of Frank Brothers Guitar Company, and I'm joined by my co-host, Aaron Goff of Goff Custom Knives. How is it going?
Very good, mate. Very good. How about you?
Yeah, I'm well. I'm feeling swamped.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you swamped by?
Well, you know, we're just balancing a bunch of things between production, getting the Haas up and running, managing, you know, like the team. We're shorthanded now. So it's just, you know, it's just busy.
Nice. Well, I mean, that's a good problem to have.
Yeah. Lots to do in the day, which is good. Yeah, sometimes cool. Do you ever feel like you get to work and you're like, I don't even know where to start. Like, cause you don't have that feeling of like, oh, I better do something. Cause I have a lot to do.
Yeah, I make lists. I like habitually make lists.
Oh, really? Do you like fold a sheet of paper in half and like write something, a bunch of stuff on it?
I keep a pad of post-it notes on my desk. And basically every time I think of something I need to do, I add it to the bottom of the post-it note. And then every morning I rewrite the post-it notes.
With all those same things on it?
Well, if I've done stuff, you know, and they've been crossed off, then I don't put them on that new one, obviously, right? So each day it's like a reminder of the stuff that I have to do, like the new, you know, leftover stuff,
right?
And it's just like if something pops into my brain suddenly, like, oh, I have to order more of that tool or, you know, whatever, then it's a really great way to keep track of those momentary thoughts rather than like losing track of them.
That's good. Do you like the fact that it's a physical thing, not like digitized? You're such a computer nerd, I figured. You know,
I'm kind of backwards about some stuff, honestly. And like, that's one of them. Like, I think just having that post-it on my desk, like it comes to my attention much more easily than like a digital list that might get minimized or, you know, hidden behind other stuff.
I suppose that's kind of the part of the design of the post-it. You're supposed to like stick it right in front of your face. It's bright color. Interesting.
Yeah, but I, you know, as I said, like I rewrite it every day.
Right.
So like if nothing's changing, then I don't rewrite it. But if there are items that have been crossed off, then I'll rewrite it.
Yeah.
And that just kind of like, I don't know, like sometimes you'll just be like, I can't even be bothered. That thing's so unimportant. I can't even be bothered rewriting it.
Right. It kind of gives you perspective.
Yeah.
This is maybe a dumb question. How big is this post-it?
Standard? Oh, not very big. Yeah, they're like, what, 2.5 inches by 2.5 inches? Something like that.
Huh.
Not very big.
So you pick like your top, like most important things or your big ticket items?
No, if there's like a ton of stuff I have to do, I'll have like multiple post-its.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah. Right. But like generally, if that's happening, then it's like, I don't know, a sign that either I'm right in the middle of doing something or like stuff's fucked.
That's so if I walk into your shop one day and it's just covered in post-it notes,
you'll be like, oh god, poor guy.
I used to work with a guy who every morning he fold a piece of printer paper in half and write down, make a list of all the things he had to do that day. And I've seen other people do that too. It seems to be like kind of a common practice. And I never got into it myself, but I do like the idea of having that. I feel like I'm not, I'm not that, what's the word? Regimented.
Right. Yeah. For me, I don't do it. I rewrite it in the morning, but I don't write things down in the morning. Like I don't really generally add new stuff in the morning because like in the morning I'm dumb, you know? So like I want this list to just tell me what I have to do. I don't want to have to show up at the shop and then like think about it. What do I have to do? You know, I want to just have a list of stuff. Generally speaking, before I leave the shop in the evening, that's the time when I'll be like, what do I need to do tomorrow?
That's smart. Because then, you immediately give yourself, while you're dumb, your morning dumb, you're like, you don't have to think about what there is to do. You've already made yourself a list.
Exactly.
That's what I'm talking about. That's those times I walk in the morning and I'm like, oh, what do I even start? I'm like,
yeah,
end up spending like 20 minutes, 15 minutes just thinking about what do I need to do today.
No, 100%. I'm like that all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know,
maybe
I'm more regimented because I'm dumber.
Well, you're giving yourself a hard time if you think you're dumb. You're a pretty clever dude. We at the shop, like, we have organizational systems, mm-hmm. That do help me with this.
Right.
So one thing we have is, like, I don't know, we call it our production board, and it's just got every order in a different stages of production. So we've got columns that says whether this mm-hmm. is in, you know, on deck, or in woodwork, it's in pre-finish, you know, all the different steps, it's shipping. So that gives us like a snapshot of production, which is, you know, easily
super important.
The most important thing, or one of the most important things running a business. So I can always go to that. And then we also have, every customer has a checklist on a clipboard.
Right.
And so I can always be like, okay, I do woodwork and, you know, manage pre-finish and shipping. Mm-hmm. So I can always just look to those three columns and then reference the clipboard, see where I'm at.
Right.
But yeah, there's just so many other random things to do in a day. Like, mm-hmm. ordering parts and I don't know.
Like, yeah, getting toilet paper it'll be the tiniest annoying thing that stops you. You know, like, for a while, I wasn't able to find this double-sided masking tape that I use for a bunch of stuff. I wasn't able to find it on McMaster. Like, I don't know whether they changed the search or changed the name of it or something.
Oh.
And one day I just had to sit down for like 30 minutes and like click through a bunch of tape until I found it.
Oh, really? You didn't have the part number?
I thought I did, but it didn't work or something. I don't know what happened, man. But like, it was just one of the, you know, and so like not having that tape, it was totally holding me up.
Oh,
you know?
Sure.
So, there's so many little things like that you have to keep on top of.
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, McMaster, I've had that happen once or twice where they've just continued a product or something like that.
Mm.
It's such a bummer. Is that why you stopped ordering toilet paper from them?
No, I don't have to order toilet paper anymore because there's shared washrooms in the new shop.
Oh, so that's kind of nice, actually. You don't have to buy bathroom supplies.
Well, it's nice, except for the fact that over the last year and a half, the like COVID deniers in my building are the ones that I'm sharing a bathroom with. Yeah.
Nice. And do you like, does the guy who lives next door share it as well? And he like is brushing his teeth in there in the morning?
No, he has like a washroom in his apartment, like in his shop too, I think.
So he just,
I don't know. I've never seen the inside of it. Never seen it. I think he uses the shared washroom when he needs to make it smell bad.
Oh, come on.
Let's leave it at that.
Yeah. Just getting a little blue for me. My train of thought has just been—it's gone to
derailed
shit.
By the poop talk. Yeah.
So, why don't I give you an update on the Haas?
Yes, please.
Okay. So, we cut mahogany today. Which is like the main, that's the most common wood that we use. It's our go-to. So we made a body.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, in that we took a block of mahogany.
Mm-hmm.
We drilled locating holes for quarter inch pins that are in the op zero fixture plate is what we're calling it.
Right.
And that's the vacuum plate.
Right.
Palette. And so the cool thing that Mark made was, we have a template right now for drilling our locating holes to go on the gantry router.
Right.
They're 1/8 inch pins, which have always just been so dinky. And we clamp mm-hmm. the template to it. It's got to align with the center line on the body because the body's two pieces of wood. So you want the center line of the guitar to be on the center joint. Where the two pieces of wood join. So you've got to align that, and then you have to grab these two clamps, F clamps, and clamp it. And like, oh, things have shifted as I twisted the clamps closed. It's a bit of a pain. So Mark made right. the new fixture plate with quarter inch drill bushings. So we use quarter inch pins now. And then to locate it, you just align the center line like we did before, but it's got a vacuum. It's vacuum itself. So right. that holds it while you drill it. So you don't have to futz around with clamps anymore. Works great.
Nice.
Then it goes onto the vacuum pallet in the machine.
The body so flip it upside down onto the pins.
Exactly.
Right.
Vacuum body, the body vacuums down. Then we're surfacing one side, drilling. Oh, this is one thing that's new for us. We don't do a ton of drilling on that, the gantry router.
Because you've got like crazy spindle speed.
Right? Yeah. Well, everything's interpolated holes for the most part. And right. we just never got into drilling. We have like some really tiny drill bits for like when we make plastic parts, like pick guards. But it takes the interpolating a 5/16 inch hole that's 2 inches deep with really long, terrible quarter inch like two flute end mill, it's awful. It sounds horrid.
Right.
And we broke one the other day, which is the first time. But anyways, now we bought a drill tool holder. What do you call those? Like a
drill chuck?
Drill chuck. Thank you. From Meritool.
Why? why not just use ER collets for your drills?
I mean, why do they make that is because you can get a drill bit that's totally random size. So
yeah, but if you have a full set of collets, it's not a big deal. Anyway,
but we don't
pick on you. I mean, I'll pick on you later. Okay. I'll pick on you later.
We don't buy collets like that. We buy quarter inch, half inch, and eighth inch collets, and that's it. We don't have like we buy a 5/16. This is like how it works. We buy a 5/16 inch collet, and then we'll never use it. Because we'll be like, you know what? I don't like 5/16 inch hole anymore for this. I want to.
Right.
And
well, I mean, I would say it will make your life a lot easier if you buy one full set. So like Meritool sells full sets of ER collets for each size in a little wooden box. You buy one full set and then you buy singles. That's exactly what I do. So I have one full set and then I have like extra spares of the sizes that I used most often.
Right.
Sometimes I'll have like 3/4 inch tools in the mill. Right. And then, yeah, like, you know, holding drills is like not a problem at all.
Yeah. I mean, well, we wanted it and it was in price wise, it wasn't that much more expensive to buy, to have that right. flexibility because Mark wanted to make it a 5/16 inch hole. I wanted to make it a 3/8 inch hole. Right. And I was, you know, so we bickered about that for like 10 seconds and then we just thought it would be nice to have that flexibility.
Right.
So we just did it. You know, nice. Sometimes you just kind of make those decisions. Anyways, it's beautiful.
They look very nice.
As a Meritool fanboy, you should appreciate that. I don't know if they make this particular tool.
I'm not sure if they make the drill chuck, but they would make the actual like flange tool holder part of it, like the body.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's beautiful, and we just now just drill a 5/16 inch hole.
Right.
That's great.
So did you machine the whole first like backside of the body? Like, how did it go?
It went great.
Yeah?
A couple bugs like here and there, a couple weird things. High-speed machining. Turns out you do need it from Haas, which really
Yeah, so Nick and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and he was like, I don't know if we're going to need it. And I was like, every video I've seen of people running a Haas mill without high-speed machining on looks like a snail.
Yeah, they kind of cripple the machine.
Yeah.
Intentionally, yeah. I don't know. Like I don't know if they don't have any malice behind it, but like it probably should just come with that. I think.
Yes.
I don't know. Like the machine is like, you know, we do a lot of.
You bought a super speed machine.
Yeah.
If you bought a super speed machine, it should come with high speed machine.
It should.
Like,
you know, because we're doing a lot of 3D contouring.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's maybe where it's getting bogged down. Say you're like, I guess if you want to just buy a VF2 and you're going to put a block of aluminum in it and make like a manifold.
Yeah, right. Like a, something with square.
Yes.
Square sides and yeah.
Yeah, and just a hole or whatever. Then sure, maybe that's where I think that's where people get pissed off at Haas because everything's a la carte. And yeah, and right. It feels like you're getting ripped off when you spend, you know, you have to buy to get 32 gigs of memory, you have to drop $1,500 or something. When it, yeah. And it, or like the high speed machining thing, it's on the machine. It's just a you just have to, like, it's an access code.
If yeah, you give like them $3,500,
yeah, it's an unlock, exactly. Yeah. So yeah. It's there.
Yeah, I mean, the alternative is like the FANUC controls or FANUC or however you want to say it, where like you get like 120 kilobytes of memory, and if you want 10 meg, it's like $5,000, you know? Right. Like, so I mean,
ultimately, yeah. it's still a good deal. He, you know, everyone said, oh, they like the sales guy was like, you should really get it. And we were like, well, our current machine doesn't have high speed machining in it. Machine's just fine. But they've really like crippled it. Right. It doesn't work well without it. And yeah, we've got it. Like
dwelling every time it changes direction, right?
It's like, say we're contouring the arch on the top of the guitar. It's mm-hmm. like doing, it's making a move. And then, you know, as it's going, as the Z is coming down, it's stuttering.
Right.
Making this non-2D move.
Right.
So the machine has 200 hours of free high-speed machining, and then it becomes locked. So we can turn it on for now.
Right.
And it fixed that problem. And it's the feed rate. We were like, it won't get up to what we've set it to.
Yeah. 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 I mean, basically it's just an option that you need. Like pretty much everyone should have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially these days now that we're using like high speed machining style toolpaths and like trochoidal milling and helical interpolation, you know, like all of those things that have lots of little code segments.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to need a high-speed machining option for all those things. So,
yeah. I mean, I'm not going to give them too hard a time. I'm a little annoyed that I'm now going to have to drop like $3,500.
Was it less expensive if you bought it with the machine?
I don't even know yet. So I'm a little nervous because, yeah, it could be like, oh, no, it's $10,000 if you want to just add it.
No, I don't think it's like that. I think it might be like less if you bought it with the machine, like as a bundle.
Well, there was a discount when I bought the machine. I, you know, they had 15% off.
Right.
So, I think I might have missed the mark on that. Maybe I'll cry in front of them.
Yeah. Really debase yourself and then they'll take pity.
I have no problem doing that. I'm shameless.
Perfect. You'll go far in life.
So yeah. Otherwise, it's beautiful. And oh, the chip auger. It's hilarious. And it moves the wood chips right up the chute into a garbage bin.
It's nice. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's great.
So once you get dust collection inside that thing, it's going to be nice.
Yeah, we do have to do that. And, you know, we've still got to debate whether we're debating whether we're going to get bellows for it.
Mm, right.
Which are like, it's like $3,500 for bellows.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I will say is if your dust collection is really good, to grab the fine dust, because like chips aren't going to be able to get up underneath the way covers.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's really what you're worrying about. And like, you know, stuff that kind of gums up the way covers, right?
Mm-hmm.
The big chips aren't going to do that. It's the fine dust that will do that.
Yeah.
So if you can get like a decent dust collection right at the spindle, then honestly, I think you'll be fine.
Yeah. We're going to experiment with that. We're just trying to get the machine running right now.
Yeah.
But one thing we've found just today when we were machining mahogany is the air blast is actually good. We were a little nervous about blasting the wood dust because about putting dust in the air. But we're making pretty sizable chips. And
and
actually blowing them, like having the automatic air gun on them is moving them away from end mill, so they're not being remachined,
right?
Making dust. So the faster we get those big fluffy chips out, the better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, the other thing you could do too is rather than having dust collection like right at the spindle, you could just plumb dust collection into the enclosure and just, you know, fairly rapidly exchange the air in the enclosure.
Yes.
Yeah. And that will keep the fine dust down as well, because it'll just get getting sucked straight into that ducting.
Yeah, we did have that same thought, because I mean, we on a mill, you could, you know, the spindle is stationary other than moving up and down. You could attach a dust hose there, but it's got to be on the right side of the mill if you're standing in front of it, on the right side of the spindle, and the air gun is on the right side of the spindle.
Right, so it's blowing everything away from you.
Yeah, so we'll see.
It doesn't have to be on the right side of the enclosure, does it? Like, if you put it on the left and had, like, so if it was mounted to the enclosure and then you had like a rigid, flexible hose, like one of those ones you could bend and kind of put it near where the spindle is going to be.
Yeah.
You know, that would be on the left then, and it'd be out of the way of the tool change and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely an option.
Well, I don't know if you've seen, you know, Lockline, the little blue. Have you seen the big vacuum sized Lockline?
I think I have. Yeah.
Yeah. So those are like, I think it's like $30 for a couple of feet worth of that stuff.
Oh, really?
And I use it in my shop all the time. And it stays in place really well.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to consider that.
I don't know if they make like 4-inch diameter dust collector sized ones, but they make 2.5-inch for the vacuums.
Okay. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's definitely something we're going to have to get on top of, because it does, like, I mean, machining a body makes a lot of chips.
Right.
And dust as a result.
How aggressive are you guys being?
Well,
like, I'm guessing not very right now, but.
No, pretty, trying to be pretty aggressive. Like, we're really trying to get this the machining time down. Like, we want this to be fast.
Right.
So it's really nice. Like, we don't have this on the axes, but to be able to up your feed rate.
On the machine, like dial it up, which is as it's running,
pretty kick ass. So, like, we did half the body at like 100% and half the body at 200%.
Right.
Just like checked, we're like, oh, you know what? This surface finish is good enough, because this is a glue surface. We're going to be gluing something to this.
Right.
This is fine. You know, it's about as good as we're getting on the axes.
And what kind of spindle speed and feed rate are you running?
I think it was. 100% was 140.
Oh, nice.
And I think Mark was talking about getting it up to like 300. Ooh.
Nice. Yeah, that's not holding back. And then are you like already maxed out on the spindle speed? Because you got a 12,000 RPM spindle.
15.
Right? 15?
Yeah, so with a half inch bit at 15, single flute.
Oh, okay. Well, why is it a single flute?
That's just what we've always used. It gives us a nice big fat chip. It's a nice sharp bit because of the way it's like, if you look at a single flute upcut bit, they're hollow in the middle.
It's they're actually really weak because of that.
Right. But you get a really sharp point because, you know, if you're looking at like, it's not stubby, like. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'm having difficulty describing
Well,
this.
But I mean, just if you can find a two-flute tool that you like, that means you'd be able to go up to, like, 600 inches a minute.
Yeah.
You know, just putting it out
there. No, we are looking at them. We found one on Helical that looks nice.
Okay.
Because we need a specific length, say, just for cutting out the body. For a lot of it, we're just doing... when we're radiusing the top of the arch, we're just using the tip of the bit, right? And a little bit, maybe like half an inch of the edge. So we could use something pretty stubby.
But, yeah, and stubby is good. Mm-hmm. Stubby is nice.
But we're very much looking into different bits. Like we were talking about when you were here, copy mill with round inserts. And Sandvik has a nice looking one with three inserts, round inserts.
Right.
That would be pretty good for what we're doing.
So that would be like a toroidal metal, right? Like it's not center cutting. It has inserts around the edges. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be sweet.
Because we're sort of, we can spiral in. We're not having to plunge for certain operations. We don't really need it to be cutting in the center. Right. We can go straight off the edge. Okay. So
one of those with like upshot diamond, upshot tooling, like meant for aluminum or PCD diamond inserts.
We were looking at that. The PCD stuff looks cool.
Yeah.
So that is probably going to be the future for us. For now, we have this tooling and we're comfortable with it. So that's what we're prototyping with. It's just going to get us to where it'll get us to where we need to be in order to make some progress. But
yeah, for sure.
Definitely lots of room for improvement. So very cool, that's where we're at.
That's very cool. It's awesome that you guys are like, making progress with that now.
Yeah. Felt slow. It always, that's kind of always the case just with anything. It's like slow to start. And then once you get to a certain point, it starts
accelerating.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Plus fixturing is slow. Like I think too, you're better off being slow with fixturing.
Yeah. You kind of only, the material's expensive.
Yes.
You kind of
easy to screw something up and then
want to have take one shot at it if you can. But we were already like, V2 fixturing, we could include these things or, we make it out of this material. So already thinking about that. But I think what we've got is going to get us pretty far.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
So what about you?
Good to hear.
Speaking of fixturing.
Well, I don't know if I said last week that I was nearly finished the fixtures for the kitchen knife and I was working on test pieces to work out all the toolpaths and stuff. And then the screen on my CNC on Millie, shit the bed.
No, I didn't hear this.
The old school. The screen's 24 years old.
This is not the new one that you replaced.
No. This is the original CRT, analog monitor from the factory, and it finally shit the bed. So I've got a replacement monitor on the way, but I can't really use the machine until that comes. So that's fine. I've just kind of pivoted. I've been crushing production.
Amazing.
Getting lots of knives out to customers at the moment.
That's great.
Yeah, and I'm also having to rework a bunch of processes because now I'm doing these fully custom handle scale colors.
Yeah. Right?
So I think I said to you that I was using a polyurethane glue with the ultra high molecular weight polyethylene a glue up fixture.
Yeah. With the toggle
glue
clamps.
Doesn't stick to. Yeah. And that's been working beautifully. The polyurethane glue, not so much.
Oh, really?
It's plenty strong. The problem is that I found that sometimes it would foam up just a tiny bit in the glue line.
Mm.
And then you would end up with a slightly inconsistent glue line. Which given that the glue line is so prominent on my knives, you normally can't see the glue line.
Right. You just want it to look like two pieces of material mated together.
Exactly. And with the polyurethane glue, you could sometimes see the glue line. Mm. So that's gone. I'm not going to do that anymore. Instead, I changed over to a Loctite epoxy.
Back to the epoxy.
Yeah.
Crawling back.
I know. But I changed over to one that's dispensed from cartridges.
Oh, yeah.
My dog is losing her mind here. Sorry about it if you can hear that.
Aw.
What's wrong, puppy? Yeah, it's dispensed from cartridges, which means, and it comes with a static mixing nozzle, which means that it's super quick, super easy just to, do a couple of handle scales. Yeah, and thankfully the epoxy doesn't stick to the polyethylene either, which is critical. Yeah. So, that's been going well. And then, now I also have a whole bunch more SKUs that I have to keep track of, right? Because before it was 13 colors and, each color of each handle color combo came with a specific color of sheath. Now it's different, could be different blade in the future. I'm going to be doing different blades, different handle scales, different liner colors, different sheath color. So it's just a little thing, but basically I made a template for my thermal label printer that I use for printing shipping labels.
Mm-hmm.
And it just has you know, the model of the knife, and then like places for all of those different options, like what the blade finishes, what the handle color is, etc., serial number. And that just gets taped, like attached to the outside of the box, and then, you know, it looks nice. So yeah, just lots of little stuff like that. Same with, like, I have a script that I wrote that runs against my Shopify store that, like, spits out a list of all of the orders that I have to do and, like, what the colors of each one are and stuff. And because I'm doing, like, the ordering differently now, I had to, like, rewrite that program to work with it. But all these little things are coming together, which is really nice.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Mm-hmm. So you do different color sheets?
Yeah.
I don't think I'd seen that.
Yeah, I mean, for the longest time, it was like black and brown. And now I do black, brown, gray, orange, and red.
Oh, wicked.
And again, like it's pretty nice, actually. Like the way that everything's working out now, it's not really a big deal to add an extra color,
mm-hmm.
you know, an extra option. So I'm probably going to keep expanding it. Like it just means that I have to keep stock. You know, I might have to keep like $100 worth of extra stock per color, but that's not a huge deal, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's the more options you give people too, I think the more fun it is.
Yeah.
Then you can really get a sense of customization.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great.
So yeah, that's been coming along really nicely. Yeah, apart from that. Oh, and I've also been, so the fixtures that I use to make my camping knife, the Resolute, you know, I designed all of these, what, like 5 years ago, 4 years ago, when I was still kind of learning Fusion 360. And I was very organized, quote unquote, with the design. So like, you know, the Op2 station on the fixtures is like a separate file. And then that file is like included into an assembly drawing. And then, you know, so there's like 12 files or something that all come together to make up this one big assembly. The problem is like whenever you update one of those files, then like that might, particularly if it's something like the actual knife itself, which almost every other file depends on, then you end up in the situation where all of the individual parts of the fixture need to be updated, and then the main fixture needs to be updated, and so you just end up in this hell of like everything needing to be updated all the time. And sometimes when you update stuff, it like breaks the assembly, like things don't go back into the right places. So yeah, I blew all that up this week. Okay. I was just like, fuck this. There's a function in Fusion called break link that basically just like takes away that link of the file to the thing and just like inserts it into the design that you're currently working on. Just puts the latest version in.
And now it just lives there.
It just lives there.
Oh, that's pretty handy.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to redesign. You didn't have to start from scratch.
No, which is thank God. But yeah, so this is like the kitchen knife fixtures. All of the fixtures are done in one design with each station being an individual component. And that works beautifully. So I had to like update the Resolute to be more like that, because I'm actually going through the process right now of moving everything back to hard milling. So
yeah,
just until very recently, I was like cutting out the shapes of the knives while the steel is soft, then heat treating them, then hard milling the bevels. I'm moving everything back to hard milling.
Cutting them out hard milled.
Yeah.
Or hardened. Is it easier to harden the material when it's just a blank?
Either way is fine because it's still just flat. The main issue is just that, like, let's say I get a batch of material, you know, I'm running low on steel. I'm running low on like heat treated blades. I need to like, you know, get some more stuff heat treated so I can keep doing machining. I'd get a batch of material in and then I'd have to go through that and cut it all up into the, you know, the knife shaped blanks. And then heat treat it. So there's a bunch of batch work there.
Right.
Right. Whereas now I can just like get steel, cut it to lengths on the bandsaw, heat treat it, and then it goes straight into the machine.
Right. Yeah, that does sound a little simpler.
Yeah. So one of the new materials that I'm investigating for my blades, I did some testing with it a while ago, and it turns out it actually shrinks during heat treatment.
Oh.
not a lot, but enough that my pinholes no longer line up
right.
properly. Right. So the steel that I use currently, A2, is specifically known for being very stable during heat treat. Mm. It doesn't move very much, but apparently other materials, that doesn't really apply.
That's funny, so, yeah. You don't, well, so you yeah. don't have much of a choice unless you know exactly how much it's going to shrink.
Exactly, yeah. So, but yeah, everything's come along well. Yeah, it's interesting how, like, going back and redoing a process, you get to apply a lot more, like, you know, new knowledge to it every time.
Isn't it also funny, too, how long you'll live with a process the way it just is, even though you want to change something about it?
Yeah, I mean, in the past, I have succumbed to, like, the urge to fix things mm-hmm. too early.
Yeah, okay.
And then, you know, I'd accidentally blow up a process that was otherwise working.
Right.
You know, like, I'd accidentally leave out some little tiny bit or, like, change one little thing, and then it doesn't fucking work, and I have to spend, like, you know, a week or something not running production because I've broken this process, you know? So, yeah, I'm a little bit more hesitant to do that these days.
Right.
But that's fine. Like, I think this is kind of the sweet spot where it's, like, you know, just fucking fix it.
Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, sounds like you're solving for a problem that actually exists.
Yes, which is always a good thing. So, yeah, I mean, it's been a productive week, just very busy.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
So, what we got some feedback on our ramblings.
Yeah, well, it was really awesome that, like, everyone says that, nearly everyone said that they really like the new format. The only feedback that we got was that it would be great to have, like, you know, one or two segments as well. And I 100% agree. The problem is that Nick and I are just so good at talking shit that we never actually make it through those bits.
It's true. We gave ourselves a hard stop at 30 minutes and we blew right past it.
Yeah, so we're going to try and be a bit more disciplined about that. But, yeah, so do you want to talk about space, Nick?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I know nothing about space. I have read, a Neil deGrasse Tyson book in my day.
Well, you're going to have to start learning more if you're going to talk to me, buddy. You're going to have to start learning more. So, like, the last little while has been a really exciting time for, like, space news because SpaceX were doing the Starship testing. You know, so they were literally, like, putting brand new prototypes on the launch pad and then, like, you know, sending them up to do 15-kilometer test flights and, like, seeing what happens, you know. And it was very exciting because a bunch of them blew up and so on, right? And that's kind of the first time that I can ever think of where, like, a new spacecraft like that has been so publicly tested.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like, you know, normally this stuff happens on, like, Air Force ranges or whatever, you know. Like, it's not, I wouldn't say it's like a secret, but they're not like live streaming their own tests, you know, whereas SpaceX were like sending out live streams from all the cameras on the rockets. There were like a bunch of people near the test launch site with like big long lenses, you know,
yeah,
taking live video.
Is one of them Jeff Bezos?
the whole Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk thing's really funny, man. they don't like each other.
Do they not?
No, apparently they used to get along, and then, like, I think the rivalry just went too far, you know? So now there's, like, pretty public jabs between the two.
That's funny.
On Twitter.
So Bezos doesn't drive a Tesla?
I don't think so.
He strikes me as the type to drive, like, a Hummer.
Well, the thing that I find really interesting is, so, like, Jeff Bezos' company is called Blue Origin, right?
Yeah.
And they are actually older than SpaceX. Oh. They've been around longer than SpaceX. And I cannot work out what they're doing. So they have one rocket called New Shepard, I think, from memory. And it's a suborbital passenger rocket that's basically meant for space tourism.
Right, okay.
And they've launched a couple of them for test flights, but they haven't had one with people on it yet. And I don't understand how you can pour so much money into a company and not, you know, like, they've had longer than SpaceX, and, like, I just feel like they haven't done anywhere near as much, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of blows my mind.
Well, I guess he's just got much of money to blow. I heard he wants to send it, like take his brother to space.
Yeah, so Jeff Bezos and his brother, and I think it's like one other, someone paid $28 million to be on the first,
wow,
like space tourism flight.
Like I was gonna feel like an idiot Shepard when in 5 years it's like $2,000.
Well, so this is the thing that like SpaceX are saying that they are hoping to get it to the point where an entire Starship launch is $2 million.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So like for reference, so the previous most powerful rocket ever made was the Saturn V. So that's the one that took astronauts to the moon, right?
Okay.
Launching one of those cost $1.2 billion.
Money well spent.
For just one. Yeah, 100%, 100%. But like launching, if you launch a Falcon 9, which is SpaceX's smaller rocket, and you get to reuse it, then one launch is $150 million.
Okay.
If you are going for a more powerful launch and you end up having to like destroy the rocket, you're not going to fully reuse it, then it's like $500 million. And they're hoping with Starship that everything will be fully reusable and they'll get cost per launch down to $2
million. Oh, wicked.
Which is insane. And Starship, the new one that they're working on, Starship Super Heavy, which is the booster stage for the Starship rocket that we've been seeing. That thing is by far the most powerful rocket ever made.
Really?
Yeah. More powerful than the Saturn V by like a substantial margin. And this thing is just monstrous, man. Like I saw a picture the other day of the blueprints, like just kind of a cutaway drawing of the rocket. And down the middle, there's this tiny little pipe. Because there's two tanks. There's the liquid methane tank and the liquid oxygen tank. And one, they're stacked one above the other. So there has to be a pipe going down the middle of the bottom tank to take the, I think it's the liquid oxygen, down to the rocket engines, right? And, you know, the pipe doesn't look very big. But then I saw a photo of that pipe. They were installing it next to actual people.
Uh-huh.
And you could comfortably crawl inside this.
Oh.
Thing. It is.
What's it called? Okay, huge. What do I look for?
Starship Super Heavy Booster.
Starship Sec Super Heavy. Sounds like a 70s band.
So yeah, they're currently working on BN2, which is their like first kind of production super heavy booster, and that might actually reach orbit. It's the thing's just like insane how big it is.
Wow. This looks cool. Google it. It looks mm-hmm. awesome.
Google it. Yeah, everyone Google it. If you haven't seen...
Have you guys heard of Google? It's great. You can put type in anything.
Nick's a little behind the times. You know?
Wow, yeah. Look at that.
Yeah, so like they're mounting... BN2 is going to have 29 Raptor engines on it. And the Raptor is like probably the most advanced rocket engine ever made. And the production version is going to have 32 of them on it. And it should be able to launch like 150 tons to orbit in a single shot.
So, okay, how many people could they fit on this thing?
Like in Starship, if you were just to fill it with people?
Well, no, is this what they want to make $2 million to shoot into space?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so but I mean, it's not meant as like a space tourism vehicle. It's meant as like a... You know, astronauts and cargo kind of.
Okay, people. So this the him and Bezos have a different, like,
very different mandates.
Okay, yeah. So one wants to send people into space.
Well, like as far as I know, SpaceX
or passengers.
They want to. Yeah,
is I mean, Elon Musk going to have? You're all right. Tourists. Yeah, the guy wants to send his brother into space, and one guy wants to send real astronauts into space.
Well, and hopefully at some point, like colonists, like he wants to send colonists to Mars, right? Like that's.
Yeah. Why Mars? Can't we find something better?
Like where?
Well, I don't know. Haven't you seen, you know, what that James Cameron movie?
Avatar.
Avatar. Yeah. No, I mean.
We have to find a planet with blue people on it that we can colonize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I mean like, okay, I get it. Like there's not. That would be like 100 light years away to find. Well, you got to find it first. Wow, I'm sounding like an idiot. But okay, what's on Mars? I mean, it's.
I mean, fuck all, yeah, really. But like, there's, you know, resources there. There's a bit of an atmosphere, you know, like it ultimately at the moment, it's our best shot, okay, for
colonization. It is a planet in space that we can reach.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if there was something better, we'd be going for it. Yeah. But as far as we know, there is.
Okay. But so better. You're going to always have to live inside.
Yeah.
Okay. So much. Why not the moon then?
Well, they're trying to do that as well.
For real?
Yeah, so NASA has a program called Artemis, which is going to return humans to the moon. I think it's by 2030 they're aiming for, or 2026, something like that. And Starship was the only landing system that was selected for the Artemis project.
Okay.
And then Blue Origin went to Congress and had like a little crying hissy fit. They were like, you guys didn't give us enough of a chance to rebid and blah, blah, blah. And so Congress has reallocated like $10 billion for Blue Origin that hasn't even reached orbit yet to create it's not just Blue Origin. It's a conglomerate of companies. Okay. But I really, to me, that really just felt very like, you know, come on guys. Like
they whined and they got their way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit sad. But that being said, I'm super excited to see people going back to the moon. Mm-hmm. Like that's super, super cool. But yeah, imagine Starship landing on the moon. Like all of the other proposals were like these dinky little landers. Maybe they fit two or three people, you know. Starship's like 12 astronauts, a moon buggy, you know, a little habitation system.
Yeah.
It has like a crane that's going to come out of the side of it to lower everything down. You know, like that thing's legit and huge.
Sick. Okay. So when's that going to happen?
Let's see. I think it's by 20, in the mid 2020s, it says.
All right.
It doesn't say exactly when, but you know, I mean, if Starship keeps proceeding at the pace that it has been, like they're going to be ready for that pretty soon.
Wow.
A couple of years probably.
Okay. Wicked. That'll be wicked to watch somebody, land. Okay. I want to see them land on Mars though. I do want to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be very, very cool.
So that's space.
Nick's ready to move on to something else now. We should.
Well, I'm trying to keep this keep moving. Going.
I appreciate that. We have to get a bit better about the
flow,
the segues. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I thought my segue was terrific.
Yeah. So,
what's next?
We should get on to listener questions.
Yeah,
that's right. We missed some listener questions. So yeah, Scott Hoadley on Instagram was asking what's the basic tooling that we'd recommend for a CNC?
Single flute, like, upcut.
Well, and you and I have already disagreed about this on this episode, which is why I think it's interesting.
Oh, like,
I would never
collets.
Buy a drill chuck.
Well, I had my reservations too, but if you want to drill some stuff, it's like, you know, you're going to have like a 3/32, 5/32 collet. Like, I mean, just like how many collets
yes.
you gonna have?
Yes, like you're gonna have a full set. Okay, that's what I don't understand.
But
like, you didn't.
What if you're gonna buy numbered drill bits and fractional drill bits?
Well, so the collets have a collapse range, right? They have like a 1/32 of an inch collapse range. So you just choose the next largest size and then squish it down.
Yeah. Well, I stand by my decision. So, Scott, whose side are you on?
Yeah, Scott, tell us. Well, so for me, I mean, part of the difference is like you're talking about running like one drill. You know, like what if you were running six? Would you want to buy six drill chucks at a slightly higher cost each, or would you buy six ER?
Oh, definitely ER collets. I mean,
yeah,
they're like in one for, you know, on one hand, they are more versatile. On the other hand, drill chuck is pretty versatile. If you're not sure, like we were like, oh, like mm-hmm. we could test out a couple different drill like hole sizes for this,
right?
Okay, so basic tooling for a CNC. I mean, ER
collet. So another one, yeah, ER collets tooling. I think are fantastic.
Yeah,
like ER25 is a great size. ER32 is a little bit less flexible because the nose of the tool holder is a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, we've been really liking the ER. What did we go for?
ER 25.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all of my tools, I have ER 25 and ER 11, and that's it. And I only have three ER 11 holders, and I basically only use them because I bought them and I've got to use them. if it was
like the way they look.
Yeah, I mean they're quite slim, which is handy cool. In I think if you're a job shop, it really you need a much broader range of tooling if you're a job shop.
Yeah, or if you do like 5-axis stuff.
Right, and they need very slim tool holders, and 100%. But for me, you know, where everything's pretty flat, I'm not really taking deep cuts or like working inside tight clearances. Mm-hmm. ER25 has been really nice.
Yeah, we were exclusively using ER32 with the axes.
Right.
And now it looks so funny because
right.
The ISO 30 tool holder is mid-sized, kind of small. But the biggest, well, not the biggest ER, call it, like you can get bigger ER calls, but ER32 is kind of on the big size side.
Yep.
So it just looks goofy now. But ER25 has been really nice. I kind of want ER11 for some of the like eighth inch tooling, like eighth inch shank tools.
Are you just worried about like nose
clearance? No, the reason I want it, for the visual clearance, like you can see. You can see the tool better if you don't have a ton of stick out. And if we want to start filming more stuff, I think it would be handy to have that visual clearance.
Get some end mill holders, man. Like if you're going to run little tools with 1/8 shanks.
I'd like the idea of end mill holders. I still like, you know, you've got a set screw pushing against one side. And I know you like the shank has to have a certain rating. I don't know if the tooling we currently are using
doesn't have
that tight of tolerance, at least not listed. I could ask them.
I think you'll find that because pretty much all carbide tooling is made from like centerless ground carbide blanks.
Right.
Right. So like the guys that are making the end mills, they won't be making the carbide blanks. They'll buy those in.
Right.
And
unless you're like tolerance on those or something.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe, you know, but like the tolerances on those carbide blanks are very tight. So usually the shank of the tool is tight enough.
I would like to see one and like feel it. Like I'm sure it would be fine, but it just seems like if there was a disparity there that you're automatically pushing the tool off center.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. Particularly if you're using really tiny tools, like the tool that you guys use for your fret slotting, you know, it's really tiny.
Yeah.
Little tool.
Yeah. 23. Any
amount of runout is going to like break that tool or shorten its life. So, but yeah, I mean, if the shank tolerance is good, then you're not going to have any problems.
Right.
Like the end mill holders, the bore in those end mill holders is so tight that like the set screw can't push the tool off center.
Right. So is it a slip fit or is it like, do you kind of have to, is it a bit
it's
of
a slip fit, but it's like a hydraulic slip fit almost.
Okay.
Right. Like you have to like push the end mill in and if you let it go, it'll like spring back out.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So yeah, they're really, really nice. And then you never have to worry about cleaning collets out. You have like really good clearance for air blast and vacuum. Really good visual clearance so you can see in there.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea a lot. And then also, you've got just the cost of the tool holder. You don't have the additional cost of the collet.
Yes. And they're quite inexpensive. Mm-hmm. Like the Maritool ones, I think they're like
85.
80 bucks, something like that. Yeah.
So definitely something I want to look into. I don't know if the tooling we have now would be suitable, but maybe it would be. So I can always put some... I have like... So like we buy our fret slotting bits from precisebits.com.
Yep.
And they're not expensive. So we buy like 10 at a time because you just need to have them on like on hand.
Yeah, totally.
So I could mic 10 of them, see what it comes out to.
Yeah, totally, man. I mean, that's good enough, right?
Yeah.
I'm actually excited. So Maritool have just released a hydraulic chuck tool holder.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they've just released their BT30, and Frank told me that the Cat 40 ones are coming within a couple of weeks. So I'm going to be getting some of those to try those for my hard milling instead of the end mill holders, because hydraulic holders have really, really good damping characteristics.
Interesting.
So I'll be I've been wanting to do a video for years on like ER collets versus SK collets versus end mill holders versus hydraulic holders.
Right.
And I wasn't really able to because the hydraulic holders that I was looking at previously are made by Shunk, the Shunk Tendo ones.
Yeah.
And they have two versions. They basically have one that has like a single bore, like an end mill holder that's specifically for one size of shank. And then they have one that's larger. It's a 3/4-inch bore and you put a sleeve in there.
Okay.
Yeah, like a reducing sleeve. And the one that's like a 1/4-inch shank, it's actually not deep enough to get my end mills all the way in. Like, so you end up with like, you know, 3/4 of an inch or an inch of stick out because they, I don't know why they did that. Like, why wouldn't they just make the hole deeper? You know, it seems crazy. And then I talked to one of their reps about getting the 3/4-inch end mill holders I talked to them at CMTS and they just never got back to me.
Oh, that's such a bummer.
You know, so I'm going to be buying some of those, hydraulic holders from Marital.
And do you need them like something to open them?
They just have, so these ones, there are two types of hydraulic holders. There's one that has an external hydraulic unit where you have to like attach a pipe and then like pump a handle and stuff. And then there's one that has like a set screw plunger. So it's basically like a little tiny hydraulic cylinder in the actual tool itself that's actuated by a set screw.
Really?
Yeah. They're really, really clever. So it's a tiny sealed hydraulic system in the tool holder. And that's the style that Frank is, that Marital is selling,
right,
where you just like tighten up a set screw and that pushes a little plunger, and that applies the hydraulic pressure.
Very cool.
So yeah, I think I'm going to do that comparison video, sometime in the next couple of months. I'm not exactly sure when. And I'm going to be, I want to test like ER collets versus an ER collet with a ball bearing nut. And the same for SK holders as well.
Yeah, can you explain SK? I don't really know what the difference
is. So SK is another type of collet tool holder. Just the shape of the collet is different. So on ER holders, like they have a fairly steep angle on the outside. I think it's like 8 degrees or something. Whereas an SK, it's half that. And that means that it when you tighten the collet down, it produces a lot more force. But because that angle is like shallower, the collapse range of the collets is also much smaller. So you have to use like more collets to cover a given range.
Right.
So ER holders are more versatile because you don't need as many collets and so on. But SK collets are supposed to be more rigid because there's a longer length of collet engaged with the tool holder. Mm-hmm. And also, they're supposed to have much higher clamping forces.
They look cool too.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've got one of Marital's SK16 holders. And for me, I didn't really notice much of a difference between that and ER for what I was doing.
Right.
And one of the issues for me is that when you're hard milling, you're producing these tiny little chips that are really, really hard, and they get blown up inside the collets by the air blast, and then it's impossible to clean them all out before you loosen the tool holder off, and then they end up scoring the inside of the tool holder taper.
Oh,
as you undo the bit, as you undo the collet nut. So for me, the end mill holders are fantastic because there's no place for the chips to get into.
Yeah, I really like that about them. I mean,
yeah,
if I change a tool, I'm having to blow out a lot of dust from inside a ER collet.
And you told me that one time you didn't do that. And how did that
happen? Oh yeah. So I just was like swapping a tool fast. And I pulled the old tool out, put the new, new, end mill in, and then tightened it. And there was so much compacted dust in the slots of the ER collet that it didn't close evenly, and it favored one side. It crunched one side in and the other side opened up more. So it held the tool, but I'm sure
it destroyed the collet.
Yeah. I mean, the collet was toast for sure.
It's not great.
Yeah. So keep an eye out for that. Always clean your collets. So I don't know if we were really answering Scott's question though. Basic tooling for a CNC,
ER collets. I think to get started with, just buy a range, like buy, you know, let's say you've got like 30 tools in your tool changer, buy like 10 ER25 or ER32 collets, with, you know, a full range, at least one full set of collets for that size, and then some extras of like 1/8, 1/4, 3/8, 1/2, because those are the ones you'll use the most often.
Now, I would say, depends on what you know you're using. I wouldn't buy random collets personally.
Well, but like, if you don't have a full set, at some point in the future, you will need a size that you don't have.
Yeah, but you're just, I mean,
you have to wait for
that. I literally have 3 3/8-inch collets that I bought for the Axies machine when we bought it.
Right.
That I've never opened, never used.
Right. Right.
So we just don't use that size. And we were like, well, we should get a couple of like these different sizes. We use 1/8 inch, 1/4 inch, 1/2 inch.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends too. Like if you're buying like really expensive ER collets, then yeah, you don't want to buy collets you're not going to use. But like, you know,
for $20,
the collets, random size. The collets from like Maritol are so reasonable. Just buy one of each, man. Honestly. Like I definitely have collets that I haven't used, but I don't regret having them because I know that, you know, someday I'm going to make a tooling change. I'm going to need some weird sized collet and I'll have it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then also you're going to need end mills.
Yeah, it's really hard to make recommendations on that front though, because it's going to be so specific to what somebody's doing.
But you obviously would suggest Maritol as a resource.
Yeah, I mean, I really like them. I've never had any problems with them.
And so then other places, I mean, it's just like I was looking at Sandvik's website recently and Kennametal I've looked at before. It's like, it's so confusing. But you know, Harvey, I really like their website because you can just buy a tool. Harvey also owns Helical.
But can you buy a tool on their website? I believe
so. I've never done it, but it looks like you can add to cart.
Yeah, okay, so you can't.
Oh, come on, really?
You cannot buy on, just not straight on the Harvey Tool website, you can't buy it. What happens, as far as last time I checked, which was like a couple of months ago, you can add to cart, and then you when you go to check out, what it does is gives you a list that you then send to your local tooling distributor.
Oh.
And then they will quote you. You know, and I'm not going to mention them because I don't want to shit can them, but like Harvey Tool's local distributor for me, I sent them a tooling inquiry about 2 weeks ago via email. Never heard back from them.
That's crazy.
You know, like, it's such a pain in the ass to have to go through that whole process of dealing with the distributor and stuff. Like, one of the reasons I love Maritol is because you go on their website, you know, you click buy, yeah, and then it's done.
That's fantastic. You know, like, then it comes. Yeah, okay. Now I've got to make a cart.
It boggles my mind that there's any other way to do it in this day
with
and age.
Something that's, you know, this is a consumable.
Yeah.
So I want to be able to, I want to get it fast. I need it tomorrow. I don't want to have to talk to some random person if I don't have to. I just want to go and add to cart, check out. Okay, now I can check that off my list. Not like, 100%. Oh, I've got to call Frank at Maritol. Distributor,
ask for pricing,
right?
Yeah exactly.
Yeah, no, you just go onto Frank's website and click to buy. That's nice. You don't get sent to some local distributor, which is funny.
And there are definitely, to be clear, like there are definitely other companies that are like that. Like if you go to like Lakeshore Carbide, right, you can just add to cart and check out, and you know, you're good. I just, you know, as you said, I'm a Maritol fanboy, so like they'll get a lot of free air from me because they've helped me out so much. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Lakeshore Carbide looks cool. They don't have as nice a website.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as like tooling up a new machine, personally, I would be like, you know, get a couple of like 1/8 end mills for steel, a couple of 1/8 end mills for aluminum, like 2 flute versus 4 flute, you know, a couple of 3/16, a couple of 3/8, a couple of 1/2. I'm not sure if you would choose the same thing, Nick, but like for me, it's super handy to be able to be like, oh shit, I need to make a fixture or a tool to make my life easier. I want to work on it now.
Definitely.
And I have some tools.
Definitely important to have some like old standards, you know, like this is, these tools always work for me. So I'll keep a couple on hand. I wouldn't go if I was, you know, even tooling up the Haas, we have 30 tool positions in our tool changer, and we've only bought 10 end mills, or sorry, 10 tool holders so far. 10, you know, a collet for each, because we kind of know what we're working, what we are doing with it. But like, to buy a bunch of different random stuff that you just to have is expensive, especially when you can go onto Meyer Tools website or Lakeshore Carbide's website and just buy it and have it here that week or like in a couple days. If you're not in a huge hurry, I would buy as little as possible, as little as I can to get by, and then start adding stuff over time, just for cash purposes.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, for me personally, I would buy, you know, so if you buy like 5 or 6 holders to begin with, keep those as your like prototyping tools. Mm-hmm. And then whenever you need to add a new tool for production, you know, buy another tool.
That's a great idea.
Keep those original tool holders free, because at some point you're going to need to make a fixture or whatever, and you're going to need tool holders and tools to do that.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
Like I always try to make sure I have some extra, you know. Right now I'm actually like short on tool holders. I've got a big order in my cart with Maritool. And it's such a pain in the ass to be like making fixtures and having to like pull one tool out the carousel, change the collets, change the whatever, put it back in the same pocket, and then like your program doesn't make any sense because you're just like running one op with tool 16. But tool 16 was a drill and now it's an end mill, and then it's going to be a you know, like annoying. It's just dumb.
So, okay. So what are your most common tool diameters that you use?
Like I said, like 1/8, 1/4, 3/16, 3/8, half, you know, like if you have like, one of each of those in 4-flute, one of each of those in 2-flute, one of each of those in ball nose, one of each of those in square, you know, plus like a set of drills, then like that'll cover you.
Yeah. And just one, you know, one good long drill mill chuck. Yeah,
sure. Yeah, sure. Why not get a drill chuck? Nick wants you to get a drill chuck.
First tool you should get.
Yeah, there you go. Well, and like the other thing that I find interesting is you guys probably don't even own a vise.
No.
Right. Yeah. Whereas like for most machinists, a vise is like
the first thing you get.
What, you don't have a vise? Like what the fuck are you
doing? I do want one.
So they're very handy to have.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you guys probably won't use them very often, but like, I mean, even I, like, until earlier this year, I hadn't had my vise on my machine for like a year.
Yeah. You have a nice orange vise, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I'm not sure that I would spend.
They're expensive.
They are quite expensive. I got a good deal on mine because it was like early on in Orange's history, and like I kind of know Eric, I knew Eric, the owner. And so, yeah, it just worked out. But like for the amount that I use my vise, I'm not sure that I would spend like Orange vise money on it.
But what are the other options? I mean,
honestly, like you can go to Shah's or something and get like a cheap Chinese made vise. Okay. It's not going to be anywhere near as good.
Right.
But the real reason that you buy a good vise is for repeatability. Like, you know that when you tighten it down every single time, that fixed jaw is staying in the same position and your parts ending up in the same position. If you're not doing like serial production, then repeatability may not be as much of an issue.
Right. If you just want to hold a part, you can indicate, know where it is. It's going to hold it into place. I've been loving seeing what people are doing with these like pallets, these vise pallets. That's so cool.
Yeah. And for a vise pallet, you would definitely want really good repeatability.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I think a vise is pretty essential for most people, not for you guys, Nick, because you're just doing very different stuff. But like, yeah, I mean, it's interesting that like sky's the limit, you know, it's like Chinese made Shah's, and then there's Kurt, and then there's like Orange vise at the high end.
Yeah.
I really like my Orange vise, but like, I don't know if I was paying full price now, if I would do that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
do like nice things, though.
Me too, man. But yeah, I think that, I mean, that kind of covers the basics, really, for tooling up a new mill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then just like random taps, and I wouldn't go crazy on buying thread mills unless you know you can use them, because they're so expensive.
Yeah.
What else? Champ, yeah, a good chamfer bit.
Yes. Yep. Chamfer mills.
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be something more.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the, kind of the final thing is like, don't blow all your money buying everything that you can think of right off the start, because there's always going to be more.
Well, it's like, you know, we have a certain budget for tooling up the Haas. We haven't been spending it, which, I mean, we can, but
yeah, that's because you're a cheap bastard and you're buying one drill truck at a time. Yeah. One end mill.
I got 30 drill trucks. Yeah. In the Haas. No, it's like we want to just be, we want to kind of get everything up and running, and then we can start really dialing shit in. And part of that is upgrading our tooling. So use kind of, it's like proofing out programs. You don't really want to throw this brand new, beautiful, like, insert copy mill in.
Not when you're learning the machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like if you've gotten to the point where you've learned the machine, you know, 6 months from now, if you're not comfortable chucking a brand new tool in, then something's wrong.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? Like at some point you have to get comfortable, but like at the beginning,
just to make those first chips and get comfortable. Yeah. I'm not putting in like
some really expensive stuff. No, I totally get it. One thing I was going to say about tooling, actually. So I don't know if you get this, but I've been getting like 2 emails a day from Haas.
I get a lot of emails from Haas.
Yeah. For like their tooling and everything.
Yeah, which you can't even buy in Canada right now.
Right now, yeah. But you know what? One thing that really pisses me off about that is like, so they sent me an email today saying like Haas, the US leader of mills and tooling. Their tooling isn't made in the US. It's made in China.
Is that right, though?
It, yeah, 100%. I checked on the website a bunch of places. All of it that I could find was all made in China. And they're like undercutting companies like Maritool on pricing, positioning themselves as like a US manufacturer and selling Chinese tool holders.
Interesting.
And that pisses me off a lot. You know, like I'm sure the quality's fine, whatever, but like.
It's just they're just an importer now.
Yeah, and like a company like Haas that are so big, you can't tell me that they couldn't have set up their own manufacturing line for tool holders.
I mean, and they should. Their whole thing is US made and like...
Yeah, 100%, man. So I was really disappointed about that because like I'm pleased that they make their machines in the US. I think that's really nice. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite sure why they decided to, you know...
We'll see. I mean, maybe they're just trying to create the brand before they buy... you know, a bunch of expensive Walter grinding machines or whatever.
Well, the pessimist in me says that maybe they're trying for the Walmart effect, where they come into the market, undercut everybody else with inexpensive, like really
set the price, the bar real low for price.
And then, once they've driven the other people out, you know, maybe they raise the prices a little bit.
Ah, interesting.
Right, like that's what Walmart often does. But anyway, I can't speak to Haas's motives. Like, you know, with all their other stuff, they've been really good, I think. So,
yeah. Well,
hopefully that's not the
best
case,
form of like, protest is not buying, which is not even an option for us.
Well, I mean, it's tempting, you know, like it really is because like they're selling like they're doing a deal at the moment where they have 5 ER collet holders for the price of 4. So that's like 4, that's 5 ER collet chucks for like $200 US. Or 250, which is that's a bit crazy.
Sorry, you're talking about the tool holder?
Yeah.
5 for $250?
Or less than $250.
Wow.
I think it's like 210, 220.
Yeah, you know, if it had been an option for us, just because we were buying a Haas machine, just probably a practical decision would have been to just buy them from them.
Yeah. It bugs me, like knowing Frank, knowing Maritool, and how hard they've worked on making very reasonably priced, made in the US.
Yeah, they are well priced.
It bugs me that, you know, that somebody else would come in and undercut them with Chinese made stuff and not be super upfront about.
Yeah.
They're made in China. Like, I think they're not hiding it, but they're not exactly advertising it.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting to see how that pans out for them if the quality holds up, because people are picky, especially. You know, when it comes to like tooling up their machinery.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know how the wallet is, right? It's always you can save a buck, most people will do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at how much like a shunt tool holder costs, though. It is like a hydraulic tool holder. It's like $400-$500.
Yes. Yeah, they are really expensive.
So if you're trying to, if you're like, oh, we need to hold a tenth of whatever.
Yeah, then you're gonna put there's always someone willing to spend the money for the quality, right?
Yeah. And the speed of a hydraulic versus, well, now I've just changed like this topic altogether, but those are cool. Mark has a hydraulic tool, like, you know, like the with the handle for, I forget what size, but
yeah, the
that's so cool. Just squishes it. That's not how I thought it worked.
Just so for Scott, let's go. Let's get back on task.
You
for a
need
second. So for Scott,
a hydraulic tool holder.
Yeah, go really expensive right off the bat. Yeah, like I think ER collet chucks, a bunch of ER collets, a drill chuck. Get a drill chuck.
I'm not gonna die on that hill.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, like a vise. If you're only doing onesie twosie stuff for fixtures, then you probably don't need the best vise in the world, but I'll leave that up to you. Yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, a T-slot cleaner, vacuum or something to like clean chips out of the machine. I know most guys use air blast. I hate doing that because it just blows chips into the tool changer, which I really hate.
Mm.
Yeah. Right. And then, you know, you'll spend the next 5 years buying more shit.
Yeah.
Honestly, there's always something to get. Yeah.
Was there any other questions?
That was it for today, okay. I think. Yeah. So we could probably call that a show, seeing as we've waffled on for quite a while.
Yes. That might be one of our longer episodes, even though we started this saying, let's keep it tight.
That's fine. Like I would love to get more feedback and questions from listeners. Like I had someone today ask me like, oh, are you going to do window pane machine on that? And I was like, what the hell is that? You know, so I got to learn a new thing. I love questions because it drives me to learn new stuff, you know? So yeah, bring on the questions, bring on the comments and yeah, like I like the format where we have a couple of segments and then we do questions and ramble. So we'll try to stick to that going forward.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And oh, I think that I was going to mention, if you want to follow us on Instagram, that's we're pretty both fairly active. You can follow me at Frank_brothers.
Yep.
And Aaron is Aaron with two A's at the front, AARON dot Goff, GOUGH.
Yep. And then we also have an Instagram for the podcast itself, which is XYZ.CNC.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you can send messages to us on anyone. We tend to like keep our own stuff on our own accounts and then we'll shit post on the XYZ account.
Yeah, I've been meaning to pop some stuff up on that. So, but in the meantime,
yeah,
give us a follow.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially Nick. Go and talk shit to him.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, I think that's a show. I hope everyone has a fantastic week, and we will see you again next week.
See ya.
Outro music here.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.